Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website. And I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 94. I'm recording it on Saturday, February 14th, 2009. Happy Valentine's Day to all my Valentines out there in Investo world. The P10 level today is 14. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The music on this podcast is by Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com. The name of this selection is Morning Snowflake. I went over to Kevin's website to pick a music selection, and I saw Morning Snowflake, and I said, oh, I have to go with that one. That's so against the, Rob raging at the passive investing universe. And I said, Morning Snowflake, that made me think of Petey Person. And his comment that Rob used to be a puppy dog poster before the invasion of the goons. Can't we get that puppy dog back? So I'm going to try to get in touch with my inner puppy dog. And I'm going to use some podcasts with titles like Morning Snowflake. And I listened to it, and it reminded me a little bit of the music for Love Story. So I said, it's Valentine's Day. Let's do a love story theme. Let's do Morning Snowflake. The title of the podcast is Schiller's Fix. We need a government subsidy for financial education for middle-class investors. Something I like about this podcast idea is that I do rage against the passive investing universe. I listen to my stuff. I listen. And yeah, that guy, he's always unhappy. He's always, angry at the world, angry at Investo world. And my theory is it takes a tough man to make a tender chicken. You can't be a puppy dog all the time. I think of myself as the Frank Perdue of retire early discussion board community and the indexing discussion board community. I think we need somebody saying, it's important to get the numbers right. We've got to get accuracy in our discussions of retirement strategies and investing strategies in general. But the anger at the world stuff, only works for so long, and you have to put forward solutions. You have to put forward constructive solutions, and it's hard. My constructive solution, of course, I do the calculators. We have the calculators at the website, and those are solutions. In that they let investors know, how investing works in the real world, what to expect from stocks at different valuation levels. So those are solutions. And the other solution I have is just to open up the boards to honest posting. Let everybody say what they believe, and you solve the problem. And the people who believe in passive investing, they say, three cheers for passive investing. And the people who believe in rational investing say three cheers for rational investing. The people who believe in the old school studies say yay for the old school studies. The people who believe in the new school studies say yay for the new school studies. And we're all friends. And we don't have any of this nastiness. And I'm in favor of that. Those are my solutions. But this is a solution that we could see play out in the real world, and I think we're going to. I think we're going to see this, but I don't know for sure. I'd put the odds maybe at 60%. I'm not saying it's 100%, but I think the odds are better than 50-50 we're going to see this. And what I'm talking about when I refer to Schiller's Fix is that there was a commentary piece, I believe it was in the New York Times, I believe it was about a month ago or so. I remember seeing it by Robert Schiller. He's a Yale professor, author of the best book on investing ever written. in Rob Bennett's opinion, Irrational Exuberance, where he puts forward, I don't have the book in front of me, but I remember the subtitle said, a revolutionary new way of thinking about how stock investing works. And it is just that. It's a revolution that Robert Shiller started, and that, you know, I do my little bit to advance at the PassionSaving.com site. But Robert Shiller, I do recall reading, he has met with President Obama, I think during the transition time, and the meeting was described as being about the housing crisis, how to solve the housing crisis, which Shiller's, you know, written about a lot. But it's a little hard for me to believe that Obama didn't ask him any questions about stocks, given that Shiller's also, a master in the field on stock investing and the passive investing crisis that led to this economic crisis. And so Shiller put forward an editorial or a commentary piece in the New York Times describing a proposal for getting us out. Well, he didn't describe it as the way to get us out of this crisis, but it was clearly intended as part of a bigger effort to get us out of this crisis. A piece of legislation that could be attached to a stimulus bill some kind of economic recovery bill. I don't believe there's a provision on this in the stimulus bill. I haven't studied that bill, but that's going through Congress at the moment. But I don't believe there's a provision in there on this. And I think I would have heard about it if it had been, or we all would have heard about it. But my guess is that there will be hearings on this idea sometime in 2009, and perhaps it would be adopted in 2009 or 2010. And perhaps not, but I don't have strong feelings about the proposal, but I am now leaning towards thinking it's a good idea. I now favor it, and I'd like to see hearings. I'd like to see people put forward different arguments, see where people come down on it, but I've come to believe it's a good idea. The idea is, and I'll have to describe this in a sketchy way, I haven't studied it, and of course it's going to change, so there are no particulars today. It's just an idea. It hasn't really been reduced to legislative language. Shiller just put forward the idea, and I saw an article where some people gave a little bit more detail. But the idea is that the government would fund a program where middle-class people could contact financial advisors. And these financial advisors would have one of the things that Shiller stressed is that they would not have any connection with the stock selling industry. In other words, they would not be trying to promote products. They would be independent. And they would be paid, I believe the number was $70 per hour for their financial advice. So if you were to call and arrange, a consultation with one of these advisors, the advisors would have to take tests. They'd have to be credentialized. And they would be paid, I don't know if the advisor would be paid $70, but my understanding is there'd be a $70 per hour fee that the government would handle. Whether it would all go to the advisor or there'd be some kind of overhead or something, I don't know. But there'd be a payment of $70 per hour. And a middle-class person could consult. And I presume there's some limit on how many hours of consultation you could take advantage of. But all of us would have access overnight to advice on how to invest. And I think it may be broader than just investing. It may be personal finance advice. Again, I don't think that's clear. What will happen in the real world is that the proposal will be put, somebody will draft up legislation and there'll be hearings and all sorts of things, and they'll change amendments and all this sort of thing. But it's potentially a far-reaching proposal. And I have my doubts about it, but I have come to believe that it's needed, that it would be a plus. Now, the price tag I saw attached to this proposal is $15 billion. Now, in the old days, that would have been viewed as a problem. That's a lot of money, $15 billion. But today, with We have bills going through 1 week that are $1 trillion, and you know, a month or two later, we've got a $2 trillion bill. So, hey, $15 billion here, $15 billion there. You know, who's counting? Who's counting anymore? So I don't know that the price tag's going to make much difference at this point. We're so far in debt, you know. You know, we're never gonna. We better not go there. We better not talk about that one. That I think we're all making an effort just to cover our eyes and close our ears and not even think about how far in debt we are. So we're not going to worry about $15 billion one way or the other. We're not even going to. That's not even a factor at this point. The question is it a good idea? If it gets our economy back on track, $15 billion is a small price, given what we've spent in terms of stimulus and all this other sort of thing. And if it doesn't get our economy on track, it's not worth doing for the cost, but it's also not worth doing for the danger, because there are potential dangers with this idea. Now, obviously there's a good side to it. People would love to be able to contact a financial consultant and not have to pay for it. So the good side is obvious. What is the bad side? Well, some people would say the bad side is getting the government involved in what should be done by the free market. In a theoretical sense, that's potentially a problem. But I think most people would be just happy to have a consultant they could talk to. So in practical terms, I'm not sure that theoretical argument counts for all that much. But there is a... I do see a real risk here. And this idea of... Motley Fool. When I used to post at Motley Fool, the owners of Motley Fool, Tom Gardner and David Gardner, they used to advocate that the government get involved, not through a subsidy, but they used to advocate just that there be more courses about investing in, say, in high school, that people get, you know, be required to learn about investing, and a lot of people supported that idea, and of course it makes sense, but it always made me nervous. And the reason it made me nervous is the Gardners were big supporters of passive investing, you know. Don't worry about valuations, just invest in stocks, no matter how risky, no matter how high priced, put all your money in stocks, and it's going to work out somehow. And I used to think, what are they going to do if they have a, you know, part of the high school curriculum is investing 101? They're going to tell people to ignore price, put all your, is it buy and hold? You know, I mean, heaven help us all. It's bad enough that 90% of the quote unquote experts are telling us to invest recklessly with our retirement money. You're now going to teach it in the schools too? That used to make me nervous. But so the question is, have we gone beyond that? Have we reached a point now where the passive investing concept, and just to review for the newcomers, passive investing is the dominant investing theory of the past 30 years, and it says you don't have to worry about price. When prices go to insane levels, just stick with that same old stock allocation, and there's certain magical incantations that are supposed to change how investing works, that if you say the phrase buy and hold enough, somehow price won't matter. You won't have a price crash, even though prices are at insanely high levels. And Rob Bennett doesn't buy into that theory. I favor something called rational investing, which says stocks are just like every other asset class on the face of planet Earth. And they're a great asset class. They're the secret to financial freedom for middle-class investors. But when stocks become insanely overvalued, as they were from 1995 through 2008, you have to lower your stock allocation, for heaven's sake. And this dangerous, dangerous, dangerous advice that we've been giving for 30 years now caused the passive investing stock crash of 2008 and caused the economic crisis we're in. And I don't think we can get out of it until we acknowledge that passive investing does not work and cannot work. And I think that's the secret to overcoming our economic troubles. Because once we acknowledge that passive investing doesn't work, it opens up the possibility of discussing the past 30 years of academic research, which shows that valuations affect long-term returns. And it opens up thousands of interesting questions once you acknowledge the valuations affect long-term returns, you're off to the races. You can do research, telling people whether their retirements are safe or not at various withdrawal rates. We have those studies now, but they're most of them are analytically invalid because they're rooted in the passive investing model. I have a calculator at my website, the Retirement Risk Evaluator, which is a new school calculator. It gives accurate numbers for retirement planning. And same thing with investing in stocks, the stock return predictor, or all these other things. All these questions, thousands of questions. Once you acknowledge the reality, the key reality of stock investing, that it's all about price, that the price at which you buy stocks affects the long-term value proposition. And once it becomes acceptable to say that in public and people can talk about it, you change the history of stock investing. Because it's like two paths in the road, and you can go off in the passive investing line, which is totally emotional, and you just get more and more and more emotional as time goes on, or you can go down the rational investing path and you become more and more confident in your decisions. So the question is, there's going to have to be credentials for these people. These people that give this advice under Shiller's proposal. And, of course, if there are credentials, there's going to be tests they have to take. So, the question's going to be, who's going to decide what's the right answer in the test? In other words, we have to get this down to brass tacks. How's this going to be decided? If the question on the test is the safe withdrawal rate A? 2% B, 4% C, 6% or D. It depends on the valuation level at the time the retirement begins. What's the right answer to that question? If you believe in passive investing, the answer is B, 4%. The safe withdrawal rate's always 4% under the passive investing model. Never changes. Valuations have no effect. It's 4%. Everybody knows that. If you believe in rational investing, the answer is D. It depends on the valuation level at the day the retirement begins. If you retired in January of 2000, the safe withdrawal rate was 2%. That was answer A. But if you retired in 1982, when the P10 level was 7 or 8, the safe withdrawal rate was 9%. Wasn't 2% or 4%, it was 9%. If you retire today, February 2009, I think it's a little below 5%. It's in the neighborhood of 5% today, last time I looked. So safe withdrawal rate's not a constant number, it's a varying number. But if we're going to credentialize these people and have them, have fees paid to them for giving investing advice, well, what are we going to credentialize them to say? Now, this is the big risk. If we credentialize them to say that the safe withdrawal rate is 4%, which is what they're teaching in the schools today, and what they're telling you, when you go to websites or newspapers or magazines to find out about, 90% of the experts are telling you that. 10% advocate rational investing. People like Jeremy Grantham and John Walter Russell and Robert Shiller and Rob Arnott, Cliff S. Ness, and Ed Easterling and John Malden, Andrew Smithers, John Hussman. Those people will tell you that valuations affect long-term returns, but you won't get that from, somebody like Bill Bernstein. You'll get both. He'll tell you that the safe withdrawal rate depends on valuations, and then at other times he'll say no, passive investing works. So we'll go back and forth. The same thing with John Bogle. Lots of others. Scott Burns sort of goes back and forth. Michael Kitsis goes back and forth. Bill Bengen, I think, goes back and forth. So Jonathan Clements goes back and forth. So you've got some people, and then you've got some people who just believe in passive investing flat out. Mel Lindauer will say it's 4%. John Graney will say it's 4%. So you've got people in all sorts of camps. how do you know the trouble you're going to have if you provide a government subsidy? You're essentially politicizing this battle that's going on. This battle's been going on in Investo world, I'd say, for 30 years. You know, for many, many years, we really didn't have that much academic research. People just gave their opinions on investing. And then in the 60s, we got more, quote, professional, and we started to have academic research telling us how to invest. And unfortunately, the first big theory was the efficient market theory, which was a wonderful theory in some ways. It led to, you know, hundreds of wonderful insights. But then the people who put that theory forward, I think, got a little full of themselves and started to think their theory was the only one that was quote-unquote scientific. And they made some big mistakes, jumped to some false conclusions. And that became sort of written in stone, you know. And so now for the past 30 years, it's passive investing everywhere you go. That's all you're allowed to hear. And but since 1981, the academic research has been showing that valuations do affect long-term returns, that the passive investing model is nonsense, that the efficient market theory is nonsense, that what common sense tells us about investing turns out to be true after all. So now what? Now, you know, that's sort of been downplayed. That's been downplayed. The experts don't talk about the research showing that passive investing cannot work in the real world. You can find it on the internet. If you look for evidence that valuations affect long-term returns, you can find it. You can find it at my website. I provide links. But you don't hear about it much. You don't hear about it in the newspapers or the, you know, most speeches. You don't hear about it. But if you're going to provide a subsidy, what are you going to do? Yeah, it seems to me where this proposal will go. I think the proposal has a good chance of going through, because it makes a lot of sense. You know, when you talk to people, there are a lot of, you know, what we found a number of things in the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate. One thing we have found, it was one of our first findings, is there's a huge pent-up desire among middle-class investors to understand how stock investing works in the real world. Huge desire. There's a article at the Banned at Motley Fool section of the site. It's entitled Community Comments on the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate Debate. And that's from the very early days back at Motley Fool. And you'll see comments there where people at the Motley Fool board, when I first started posting about the flaws of the old school safe withdrawal rate studies, people were just wild with enthusiasm. They said, "This is the greatest discussion we've ever had. This is wonderful." Hey, thanks, man. This is when I was still a puppy dog. You know, you could live as a puppy dog at Motley Fool in those days. Puppy dogs were encouraged. It was, you know, everybody, the music in the background was, what was it called? Morning Snowflake. Morning Snowflake. That was, we were all in a Morning Snowflake sort of mood. So there's great pent-up desire, and I've seen that everywhere I've gone. Every discussion board I've gone to, I've seen great desire for learning about the realities. People, it's not people's first priority. It's not. Most people, I mean, today maybe it is. People are scared today, but for a long time, it was not the number one desire to learn about investing. But people like it. They like hearing something that makes sense. We have not had investing advice that made sense for 30 years now. The idea that valuations don't affect long-term returns, I think, can fairly be described as nonsense. And it just doesn't sit right with a lot of people. And so people like hearing something that fits together, that makes more sense. But the opposition, the political opposition is huge. It's a 10-foot thick brick wall. And, you know, in the early days, I thought it was just John Graney. I thought it was just these abusive posters. But it's not. I mean, you know, in John's defense, I can say today, it's not just him. It's, you know, we've seen it at every discussion board, and we've seen it among experts. We've seen it among, you know, they don't post abusively, but people like Bogle and Bernstein and Burns and Clements, they don't want to touch this third rail of personal finance. The third rail of personal finance is letting people know that valuations affect long-term returns and that you must change your stock allocation when prices go to insane levels. You must have any hope of long-term success. That's the third rail of personal finance. And so what I think Shiller is doing here, now I don't know that it's intentional. I don't know. It could be. Could be. He's thought this through. And what I've always been trying to do, you know, I've said this at discussion boards. I've said, if we could find one board that permitted honest posting, by honest posting, all I mean is that, you know, obviously some posters are honest today. I certainly don't mean to suggest that everybody who posts at Vanguard Diehards or Bogleheads.org is dishonest, by no stretch. What I mean is that there are some people who support passive investing, and they can post honestly, but there are people who support rational investing or who support valuation-informed indexing who cannot post honestly. They believe that valuations affect long-term returns, and they can't say it. Or if they're allowed to say that, they're not allowed to explore the implications of the idea. They can't post links to the retirement risk evaluator or the stock return predictor or the scenario surfer or whatever it happens to be. And to post honestly would mean that you could do that. You could report to people what the historical data says. Not what passive investing enthusiasts say it says, what it really says. We should all be allowed to post our honest views. And of course, if we post, I've always argued that if there were one place where we could post our honest views, what would happen is over time, more and more people in that community would become supporters of rational investing. And there would come a point at which we had so many supporters that it would spread. It would spread. Rational investing would get picked up at other sites. In other words, if one board allows it, ultimately all boards are going to allow it. And it's just going to spread and spread and spread. What we have now is, it's about 90%. This is just a rough number, but roughly 90% support passive and 10% rational. But the problem you have today is that the two camps don't mix. You know, at Bogleheads, rational is banned. It's prohibited. And then you've got these so-called bear sites where people talk about valuations in realistic ways. But there, you know, it's like there's a barbed wire fence, you know, you get electrocuted if you climb it. Nobody's allowed to go from one camp into the other. And I think the idea of camps is just crazy. I think we should be sharing what we know. So if the so-called bears learn something that the so-called bulls don't know, they should tell them. And if the bulls learn something the bears don't know, they should tell them, and we should all learn together. I don't care whether you have bull or bear next to your name. If you're helping me to achieve financial freedom, it makes no difference. Help me to retire early, and you're my friend, man. I don't need to know anything else. So that's where, you know, that's where I'm trying to take things. And I think that's where Shiller's proposal may take things. But the question is still not clear to me is how it would happen. It's hard for me to believe that Shiller is putting this idea forward with the idea that they're gonna pay this subsidy. You see, the credentials question is an interesting one. If you're gonna have a subsidy, if you're gonna have government spending $15 billion to educate people on how stock investing works, government's obviously gonna have a say in what's taught. So there obviously has to be credentialing. Nobody questions that. But if you're going to have a credentialing process, you sort of have to come up with what are the right answers. And that's what there's no agreement on. Now, there should be. The way it should work is, I mean, once upon a time, people believed in passive investing. This seems clear to me. People thought it was right. So, as long as people thought it was right, that, you know, the obvious thing to do with the credentialing is you have to give the answers that passive investing gives. That's the way it should be done. And I think that's the way it is done. I don't know I mean, there are credentialing processes now for financial advisors. And I haven't seen the test. It'd be interesting to look at them. I don't know what it is. I'm not a financial advisor. I don't know what these people have to agree to say. To the extent there's any credentializing, my guess is that they have to agree with passive investing. I don't, how else could it be? It seems that that's the dominant model. So it would seem to me, maybe I should look at one of those tests. That would be an interesting question. You know, what are people required to say? Are they required to say that, you know, just to, well, the example I gave is a good one. What's the safe withdrawal rate? How much can you withdraw from your portfolio when you retire? That's probably the best one. Are people required to say 4% even though we know that that's not true? See, once upon a time, we didn't know it. So I think the tests were devised, you know, saying passive investing is right. And then from 1981 forward, we started to learn that it wasn't true. But 1981 is when the first study came out showing that, that valuations affect long-term returns. One study doesn't prove it in the eyes, at least in the eyes of most people, maybe in the eyes of some it does. So it's been a continuum ever since then. The support for passive investing has declined and support for rational investing has increased. But the tricky part is when you get involved with the stock selling industry, you're getting involved in an industry where there's a lot of money at stake, millions and millions and billions. And all of that, you know, there's huge amounts of marketing campaigns that have gone out selling the passive investing idea. And so now backtracking and saying, oh, sorry, looks like we made a mistake, is hard to do. And, of course, people are going to get angry. If people find out that you've been giving them bad advice for 30 years and they've lost their retirement money because of it, because you got the numbers wrong, people are going to be angry. You know, to some extent, rightfully so. I argue that we need to try to rein that in, but to some extent, some anger is justified. So that's where it stands. And so I guess, you know, I don't know what exactly the studies require today, but my presumption is that they, to the extent they require one or the other, they probably favor passive investing. You know, that's sort of the discussion I had with Larry Swedro one time. You know, he was giving these canned answers about the effect of valuations. And I said, Larry, you know, you're repeating stuff out of a book. I said, it doesn't make any sense. I'm pointing out to you that it doesn't make sense. And you're giving me these book answers. And he says, oh, Rob, you're being patronizing. Well, you know, I don't know. In a way, that's true. You know, I'm not trying to be patronizing. I think to really be patronizing, there has to be some intent there. To be patronizing, I think you have to be looking down at people. And it wasn't my intent to look down. I guess the way I would say it is I'm patronizing to the passive investing concept. I'm certainly patronizing to that idea, but I try not to be patronizing to the people who hold it, if you can see the distinction. I think Larry's a smart guy. I'm not trying to say otherwise. But I think he makes himself look like a fool when he says, you know, you can't predict long-term stock returns. You know, it's a foolish idea. Of course you can. If you know the valuation level, you know if the valuation level is 3 times fair value, you don't have to have an IQ of 140 to know the long-term return is going to be real, real, real bad, you know. And Larry's saying no. You know what Larry said in that discussion was that the valuation level was so high in 2000 that the long-term return was a negative number. He said, well, that just shows that stocks are really, really, really safe because the return is always correlated with the risk. So if the return is a negative number, stocks must be the safest they've ever been in history. And I just, you know, said, Larry, you're giving me answers out of a book. It doesn't make any sense. Stocks are the safest they've ever been in January of 2000. Anyway, but that's what the books say, you see. And I think that's a big problem because I had a podcast not too long ago about how I said fear of litigation is a big cause of our financial crisis because a lot of the experts, quote-unquote experts, they want to be protected from litigation. They don't want to be sued. And I understand that. I don't want to be sued. Anybody who talks about investing is worried about it. You know, I've got a thing there at my website on the one of the buttons on the left-hand side down near the bottom. It says, don't sue me, you know. A lot of people just put disclaimer, but I had disclaimer for a while, and I said, well, disclaimer, people see that, and their eyes just, you know, get glad. They just, you know, pass right by it. I said, I want them to read the disclaimer, so I put, don't sue me, you know. That's what I'm really trying to communicate. Don't sue me. I'm a puppy dog. I'm a hobbit. Don't sue me. Just trying to help. But we're all worried about getting sued. When you give people advice on money, you're asking for it. So one of the questions that's always baffled me is, given that most people are worried about getting sued, why are people giving retirement advice that is demonstrably false? You know, you put into one of these Google search retirement planning tool, and you'll get one of these old school studies where all the numbers are wrong. I'm like, huh? People are afraid of getting sued, and they're putting up numbers that are going to cause people's retirements to fail. But I think a lot of what's going on is they feel that the way to protect themselves from getting sued is to go with the conventional advice. And the conventional advice is valuations don't matter. You just stay at that same old stock allocation no matter what. That's the conventional advice. That's passive investing. So I think a lot of people are saying the way not to get sued is not to give accurate advice. The way not to get sued is to give conventional inaccurate advice. So I think our legal system today, it doesn't protect the people trying to put together safe retirement plans. It protects the people advising us how to put together safe retirement plans. You can't get sued for giving wrong information as long as that wrong information is popular. And of course, it's a bit of a wild card that, you know, it was popular as long as stocks were priced insanely high. Now that they're not priced insanely high anymore, now that there's been a price crash, I'm not sure now that that advice is so popular anymore. And I think people are starting to move away from it. But how do they move away from it? You see, this is the practical problem. How do you move away from it when you've been giving it for 30 years and you've got, you know, 100 articles with your name on them that tell people the wrong numbers? And if you correct it, it makes you look like you're not an expert. You know, if you say, oh, I was wrong for 30 years, it doesn't sound like you're that much of an expert. So that's a problem. So what I see happening is I think this proposal has legs. I think it's going to be picked up. I think it makes all the sense in the world. I think there's a lot of support for the idea. And given that we've suffered this huge economic crisis, you know, whatever opposition there was, I think it's going to diminish, because the question's going to be, we've got to do something. We've got to do something. We've got to it's hard for me to believe that Shiller's idea in putting this forward is to, you know, create a $15 billion subsidy for advocating passive investing, given that his life's work is arguing against passive investing. His life's work is arguing and showing, not just arguing, but showing with historical data that valuations do affect long-term returns. So Shiller, I presume, is thinking that the people who give this advice will be giving, you know, straight talk. But that's going to cause a problem. One of the articles I read on this said, it was saying that the $70 an hour fee isn't big enough because the standard fee now for advice is $140 an hour. Well, so you're going to have a situation where people getting paid $70 an hour are giving good advice, and people paying $140 are giving bad advice? That's not going to fly. Somehow, I don't think that's going to fly. So I think what we may be heading into is a politicization of the drama we've seen play out in the first 7 years of the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate. It all comes down to one question. The only question on the table is, do valuations affect long-term returns or not? Passive investors acknowledge that they do, but they're not willing to let that reality influence their allocation decisions. If you ask a passive investing advocate, do valuations affect long-term returns? They'll say, oh, yeah, uh-huh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, yes, everybody knows that. But if you say, okay, When valuations go to insanely dangerous price levels, how much would you say a person should lower his stock allocation? Oh, no. That would not be passive investing. You must never lower your stock allocation. Never. That would be timing the market, and timing doesn't work. Oh, no. See? So that's the debate. Do valuations affect long-term returns? And if so, can we use that knowledge, our knowledge that they do, in setting our stock allocation? Should we do so? And so what I see happening here is, I don't know how it's going to play out, but it would seem to me that, I would, when you get to these congressional hearings, I would think that someone would raise their hand and say, what are we going to require people to say? And then you've got a battle. The battle's not between Democrats and Republicans. It's a strange political battle because I know a lot of Democrats who would like to have accurate retirement planning information. And I know a lot of Republicans who would like to have accurate retirement planning information. And I know a lot of Democrats who would like to have accurate asset allocation strategies, workable asset allocation strategies. And I know a lot of Republicans that would like to have workable asset allocation strategies. You see, the strange dynamic in all of this big battle, controversy, is every single person on planet Earth benefits if we allow discussion of the realities of stock investing. There's not one person, I don't think. Obviously, the people who got it wrong feel embarrassment, but, I just don't see that. Is it going to make them feel less embarrassment not to correct the numbers? It would seem to me the sooner they correct it, the less embarrassment they suffer. Some would say that the stock selling industry benefits through passive investing because they can always push stocks. Even when stocks are a poor long-term value proposition, it would be hard to sell stocks and they might not make as much in commissions. But I see that argument, and I think there's something to it. I do think that's a big factor here. But my personal belief is, in a long-term sense, even the stock-selling industry is better off if people know the realities. Because what you get into is a situation like today where people are turning against stocks. A lot of middle-class investors are developing a hatred for stocks. Is that good for the stock-selling industry? I don't think so. So I really think everyone benefits, but and a lot of the experts, who promote passive investing, some of the strongest advocates of passive investing, I think would love to be able to tell the truth about stock investing. Would just love it. Look at Bill Bernstein. He's got an entire chapter of his book that describes rational investing. John Bogle, the leader of them all, how often in his speeches, enter the term reversion to the mean. That's rational investing. Enter that term into a search engine under John Bogle, and you'll get hundreds of hits. Bogle talks about reversion to the mean all the time. I learned this stuff from John Bogle, Mr. Passive Investing. It's from Mr. Passive Investing that I learned, ultimately, that passive investing can never work, as strange as that may sound. So I think the experts would love this. The middle-class investors obviously would love it. I think the stock-selling industry would benefit in the long term. It would be in their best interest. So who gets hurt? I can't think of anybody who gets hurt. So the logical question you would have is, well, if nobody gets hurt, why is there any controversy? Why don't we all just go rational? Well, the trouble, I think, is it's sort of the story about, there's that Aesop's fable where all the mice get together and they say, I've got a great, one of them says, I've got a great idea. Let's put a bell around the neck of the cat. And whenever the cat comes around, we'll know, and we'll know to run away and hide. And they all say, that is a fantastic idea. I love that idea, man. And then, some guy in the back says, but who's going to put the bell around his neck? That's the rub. Who's going to put the bell around the cat's neck? It'd be wonderful if the cat was wearing a bell. But who's going to put it on them? And that's the trouble we're facing today. We've known for 30 years. Rob Arnott asked at an academic conference with 200 researchers who do academic research on investing. Does that, you know, how, I want to show a hands. How many believe in the efficient market theory? And not one raised his or her hand. So nobody really believes in the efficient market theory anymore. We all know it's nonsense. But we can't say it. Because if you're the one who says it, if you're the one that sticks your head out, you're going to get your head chopped off. Because you're making all the ones who don't say it look bad. You see, the mouse who puts the bell on the cat's neck is going to get killed. And nobody wants to get killed, so nobody does it. That's the situation. The reason Rob Bennett's such a knucklehead, you know, is, you know, I'm not in the stock selling industry. I don't make any money. You know, I just got into this. I saved all my money for years so that I could spend the rest of my life helping people with personal finance questions. And, you know, dum-de-dum-dum, putting together my plan, I happened to notice that there was all this research showing that valuations affect long-term returns. And dum-de-dum-dum, I went to the Motley Fool board and told people about it. And the roof fell into my head. So, you know, that was a fluke. That was a fluke. And you've got people on the so-called bear side who tell the truth about valuations. But, you know, they're selling something different. You know, they're selling, maybe they're selling gold, or they're selling, I don't know what they sell. But, you know, they're selling different things. You know, what we need, and I think this is where Shiller's genius is coming into play. What we need is to, we need to have somebody talking about stocks who doesn't have something to sell. But somebody who has power, not Rob Bennett. Somebody who has influence, not Rob Bennett. And Shiller meets that definition. Shiller's an academic, so he didn't really have something to sell. But Shiller, you know, and Shiller had rave reviews. All these people who push passive investing, they gave Shiller great reviews in Business Week and the Wall Street Journal and Money Magazine, all these places. But then they essentially ignore him. You know, they say, oh, great book. Great book, man. Thanks for the research, man. Great stuff. Well written, smart, historical data. You know, and the next day they're back promoting passive investing like nothing ever happened. You know, great book, except they don't pay any attention to what it says. Because if they pay attention to what it says, they're going to have to hire new writers. They're going to have to hire writers who understand the ABCs of stock investing, and they're going to have to admit that they got it wrong. You know, it's like this Money Magazine article I did a podcast on not too long ago. You know, when the guy asked, you know, Money Magazine, how bad does it have to get before you guys change your advice? And the answer was, it hasn't gotten bad enough. We're still promoting the same basic stuff. But at some point, it might get that bad. And the odds are good, that I think, that it's going to get that bad. And then once it does get that bad, it'll stop. Because once it gets that bad, Money Magazine will start talking about the realities of stock investing. And once Money Magazine does it, Motley Fool will do it. And once Motley Fool does it, Morningstar will do it. And once Morningstar does it, Early Retirement Forum will do it. And once Early Retirement Forum does it, Index Universe will do it. And once Index Universe does it, Bogleheads will do it. You see? That's the way it'll work. It's a big house of cards. And the hard part is getting that house of cards to fall to the ground. But once it falls to the ground, there's going to be a flood of wonderful information on how stock investing works in the real world. If you want a preview, you know, go to John Walter Russell's site or go to my site. You could get a preview of what's to come. John Walter Russell's site is early-retirement-planning-insights.com. So we're in this weird twilight zone. And the question is, if we get Congress into the act, and of course ultimately there'd be some sort of government agency that would oversee this, if we get a government agency into the act, You're getting a player involved that's got some weight behind it. You know, the U.S. government says valuations affect long-term returns. Well, that changes things, doesn't it? If the U.S. government says it. you know, you can't ban the U.S. government, you know? Now, this is something I would advise if this goes through. Not that anyone's gonna ask me for my opinion, but, you know, I'll write a letter to somebody. If they have hearings on this, I'll write a letter to the committee and or an email, and hopefully they'll read it. What they should do, if they're going, and I think this is absolutely true, and I could write a, I'll do a whole podcast on it. If the bill goes through, I'll do a whole podcast on this recommendation. If this goes through, they need follow-up. It's not enough for a middle-class person to pick up the phone and have an hour, or however many hours we're going to get. I don't know if it's an hour or 2 hours. I don't know. I presume there's some time limit, maybe an hour every 6 months or something. I don't know what it is. If we're going to get this advice, this financial advice, subsidized financial advice, we need follow-up. You can't, if you talk to somebody for an hour on the phone and you send them back out to the big bad world of, you know, quote-unquote experts recommending passive investing, it's not going to stick. And I have personal experience with this. I've talked to people. You know, I sometimes get emails and I'll talk to people on the phone. And it's amazing what you get, because you'll run into people and they want to know. They're trying. You know, I just remember this woman called me, and she was sold. You know, she was saying, I am uneasy about stocks. This was before the crash, and I want to get out of stocks. And I found your site, and your site makes me feel better. I'm not quoting. This is all paraphrased, but this was the idea. And your site makes me feel better. And she had a couple questions. And I said, look, I don't remember her name, but I said, look, I'm glad. You know, if I made you feel better about lowering your stock allocation, I'm glad, because stocks are very dangerous today. However, I don't want you to get the wrong idea. Stocks are a wonderful asset class. You know, please understand, there are times when prices are insanely dangerous when you want to go with a low stock allocation. There are other times when you want to go with a high stock allocation. I get the feeling that you know, you're as much anti-stock as some of these passive investing people are pro-stock. And I can just tell you from the way she responded, she would, you know, she didn't disagree. She didn't want to get in an argument. But I could tell she didn't understand what I was saying. She was, it was going in one ear and out the other. She was saying, okay, I'll check the site out some more. But, you know, what she was thinking was, I'm going to lower my stock allocation. That's better. And so what I'm saying is, an hour with a financial advisor is not going to do the trick. What the way people learn, there's a phrase in philosophy. I think they call it epistemology, which is how we learn. And epistemology is the great unexplored area in Investo world. Epistemology. How we learn. If you don't know how we learn, you don't know how to invest effectively. The way we learn is by listening to other people. In other words, think about advertising. This reveals it all once you see this. How many times, I used to remember, you know, there's certain television shows, you know, you watch every week. I remember when I was a kid and we used to watch Mary Tyler Moore. My whole family watched it. You know, it made me happy that the whole family was together. But they had the same darn advertised commercials every week. We watched that show for years. And after a while, it just drove me bonkers. I'm seeing this commercial. I've seen it 2,000 times. And I would say, why do they show the same commercials? Wouldn't they make more money if they sort of varied it? You know, in other words, if you're paying for 100 showings, have 50 of them on the Mary Tyler Moore show and 50 on, you know, whatever else is out there. And you would reach a bigger, you know, audience, and people wouldn't hate your commercials. But the truth is, they do what they do for a reason. They're not stupid. They're paying a lot of money. The reason they do what they do is, what works in persuading somebody is repetition, not logic. It's repetition that persuades. And so if we pay $15 billion for government subsidy so people can call a financial advisor and talk for an hour, it's money down the drain. If you let them get an hour of good advice, And then you send them back out onto an internet where they're going to hook up on some discussion board like Bogleheads, and they're going to get this passive investing junk rammed down their throats. Not for an hour, but day after day after day after week after week after week after month after month after month after year after year after year. That's what works. That's what works. I know this. This is what we're up against. It's not a logic problem. There is no logic to passive investing. Zero. What there is to passive investing is repetition. You see, stocks were priced low in 1975, and from 75 through 95, stocks offered a strong long-term value proposition. So for 20 years, people were advocating passive investing, and it was working. Not because passive investing is good, but just because passive investing happened to be right. And then in 95, rational investors got out or lowered their allocations. But from 95 through 2000, passive investing continued to work, even though it was insanely dangerous. By luck, it happened to work for five more years. So there were from 75 to 2000 is 25 years. There were 25 years in which this quote-unquote strategy worked. And now there have been 9 years, 10 years, in which it's been a miserable failure. More and more of a failure with every year. The 10 years has not yet overturned the 25 years. That's the problem. It's starting, it's getting there. A lot of people have given up on stocks. Taylor Larimore is getting ready to give up. He's the author of The Bogleheads Guide to Investing, and he's now talking about getting out of stocks. Bill Bangin has given up. He's the author of one of the old school safe withdrawal rate studies, and he's got his clients at 0% stocks. So we're seeing a change. But we're not, you know, the 10 years of bad results for passive investing has not yet replaced the 25 years of good results in the public mind. And so if you give people an hour of good advice, it ain't going to do the job, says Rob Bennett. You've got to have follow-up. And, of course, if you pay to have that financial advisor, you know, call the person every week for a year, that's going to cost not $15 billion, you know, it's going to cost $150 billion or who knows what. The logical thing to do here is to have follow-up. And the follow-up, I think, should be on a discussion board, internet discussion boards. Almost, you know, most people have computers today or they have access to a library where they can get access to a computer. And I have a whole podcast on this question of why discussion boards are a great way of getting financial advice. It's called something like The Internet Changes Everything. I think that's the title. And I talk about how you can learn better when you can ask your peers questions as opposed to asking experts, because people are easily embarrassed and people feel more comfortable talking to their peers. So people will learn better on discussion boards. There's nothing wrong with the idea of starting with a financial advisor. But the follow-up, we need follow-up that goes on not for a day or a week or a month, but for years. And the way to do that is through discussion boards. But the discussion boards must permit honest posting. They must. Now, every board at which I've posted, in theory, permits honest posting. Everyone has rules that protect us from abusive posting tactics. Everyone. But not one of them have those rules been enforced against the passive investing dogmatists. Not one. So we need, if we're going to have a government program to provide subsidized financial advice, we also need a government program for the government to step in and either create a government-run discussion board where, you know, responsible people will administer the posting rules, or have some sort of government action to require that website owners that promise to protect us from highly abusive posting practices will be required to honor their word. They will be required to administer their posting rules in a reasonable way. And I have an article at the Bandit Motley Fool section of the site where I post an email I sent to my congressman, Frank Wolf, in Virginia. and I go through the history of the campaign of terror against the retire early and indexing discussion boards, and you can read that, and I'm talking there about the need for congressional involvement, legislation to open up the possibility of honest posting on investing on the internet. The idea that honest posting is banned at even one site, I would have told you is impossible on May 12th, 2002. But I have seen honest posting prohibited at numerous sites. You can read all about it in that post. But we're going to need that. That has to be combined with this idea, I think, for the idea to work, for the reasons I've explained. But what I think is interesting, I'll wrap it up. What I think is interesting is that I think what's going to happen is by this proposal going forward, Shiller is sort of, what he's doing is politicizing this debate. We've been having this debate in the place I call Investo World. You know, investing people have been discussing this. But see, investing people are biased. Investing people are slanted in favor of passive investing because a lot of them, that's their bread and butter. That's how they make a living, promoting passive investing. So even though the majority of all our communities have favored honest posting, I would say 80% favor the idea of permitting honest posting. The 20% of big shots oppose it with an intensity 50 times as great. And we've not been able to topple that 20%. That's been the political dilemma. I think what Shiller's doing, perhaps, I don't know that this is intentional, but I think this is where it will come out. He's putting this controversy into the political sphere, which puts it in a different light. Because, you know, I quote it many times. I can't quote it from memory, but there's a sentence in Shiller's book where he says, policymakers need to get involved in this question of whether valuations affect long-term returns. You know, what Shiller argues is that overvaluation, it doesn't just hurt investors. It hurts everybody. When our economy goes into a depression, we all lose. Rationals, passives, old schools, new schools, doesn't matter. Hurts us all. We lose jobs. Our businesses fail. We lose our houses. So we need to have everybody, all citizens of the United States, involved in this question of whether passive investing has been discredited or not. This is a public policy question. It's not just an investing question. And when it's framed that way, that changes everything. Because I am quite sure that if you took a poll of the United States, you know, all eligible voters, it's you know, 80%, 90% want to know the realities of stock investing. I'm absolutely confident of that from what I've seen on the boards and from what common sense tells me. Why wouldn't people want to know the realities of how stock investing works? It's when you get an Investo world, a world controlled by people with vested interest in blocking discussion of the academic research of the past 30 years. Not necessarily intentionally. I've talked about that question, whether it's intentional or not. The podcast I did on that was called Investing Ethics and Oxymoron. Not necessarily intentional. But when you're in an industry, you know, where many people in the stock selling industry are paid huge salaries, not just hundreds of thousands. Many are paid in the millions. And all of this, you know, I don't think it's really at risk. I think they can continue to make good money in a rational investing world, but they see it as being at risk. You know, anything that upsets the apple cart is viewed as a threat. They're going to have to change their advice. They're going to have to admit having made mistakes. There's probably a fear of lawsuits, all this sort of thing. We may need some kind of amnesty. You know, I've talked about that in earlier podcasts, but that's a third element we might want to add to this legislation, some kind of amnesty for those who have advocated passive investing in the past so that we can get past this hurdle that's held us back for 7 years now. But the more I think about it, the more I come to believe that the Shiller idea is a good one because we need to have this debate politicized. One of the things I'm expecting to do later this year is to contact some political blogs. To get, you know, hopefully get some people who are not part of the stock selling industry talking about these issues. You know, what we've discovered over the past 30 years in the academic research and in the past 7 years in the retire early and indexing discussion board communities, to get that out, you know, to get it discussed by the people it affects. It affects everybody. And everybody should have a vote. Everybody should have a say. But right now, a lot of the people who don't think of themselves as investing experts, they're intimidated. They feel, oh, this, you know, those investing experts must know more than I do. But they don't. They think they do. And you think they do. But they don't. And so my hope is that this idea will force this stuff out into the open. You know, and once it gets in the open, I think we're over the hurdle. Because when the discussion is held in a civil and reasonable way, the rational investors win. Our case is rock solid. It's rock solid. I know of no flaws, no holes in it. You know, we don't know everything there is about investing, to be sure. I certainly don't say that. But so what? You know, we don't know everything about any subject. So what? But rational investors have no problem with the idea of, you know, a full and fair airing of all viewpoints. That's fine. That's healthy. That's good. We're all for it. What we are against is the dogmatism of the passive investing model. The dogmatism that says you have to take on faith the idea that we can't time the market. That doesn't make sense. Common sense tells you, of course, you can time the market. If you buy at times when the long-term value proposition is good, you're going to do better than if you buy mindlessly, if you don't pay any attention to valuations. So common sense, passive investing and common sense are in conflict. And while once upon a time the academic research supported passive investing, for the past 30 years, the academic research is more and more coming to show support for common sense. So getting a public discussion started of the pros and cons of passive investing is just what we need. I think that gets us to the place we need to get to. Doesn't mean rational investing is going to be universally accepted. I don't actually think that will happen. But it will mean that it will open up the discussion enough that rational investing will have a seat at the table, and that the ban on honest posting will be lifted. And then, you know, people will figure it out for themselves. I'm not even sure then we even need the $15 billion subsidy. You know, if you do that, I think we could do it without the $15 billion subsidy, because people could learn by reading magazines or, you know, discussion boards or all kinds of things. You know, what I'd like to see is a world in which, you know, the people who... The financial planners that favor rational investing would advertise their services. People like Michael Kitsis, he doesn't advocate passive investing. But when he talks about market timing, he says, it's not market timing. You know, he apologizes for what he does. Instead, he should be advertising it. He should be saying, hey, I'm one of those rare financial planners that tells you how to market time. I don't go for this gibberish that market timing doesn't work. That's what we need. We need the free, you know, the question a lot of people say, is it free market solution or government? Well, the answer is we need enough government regulation to make the free market work. You see, that's the answer. The free market unregulated is a disaster. It's hell on earth. I thought we learned that back with the laissez-faire capitalism we had before the New Deal. You know, I thought we learned that in the 1920s. But what happened is laissez-faire was defeated, and then it came back. It snuck in under this efficient market theory, and it came to poison our economy once again. And what we need is, we don't need massive government intervention, but we need enough government intervention to regulate the free market, to make it sane. An unregulated free market, I have come to believe, is hell on earth. It's unlivable. And that's what we have with passive investing. Just this ugly, nasty. Because people get things wrong, and they have money, and they don't want to admit it. And they can use the money to crush the opposition. That's really what's going on. You know, that phrase they used to use. When I first went to the Vanguard Diehards, the Goon Central Board, they said, Mel Lindauer and Taylor Larimore, they have enough juice to destroy Rob. They have juice. You know, juice, they mean power. That's what unbridled capitalism is. It's just power plays. And so we need government. And I thought we had proven this in the 1920s, you know, or the 1930s, when the adoption of the New Deal. I thought we had proven this, but what happened is it sneaked back under a different name. And so once again, we do need a new deal, but we don't need massive, you know, we don't need trillions of dollars. What we need is just enough government intervention to make the free market workable again. We need to even up the playing field so that people who understand that passive investing doesn't work can have their case heard, and then leave it to people to figure out what's right and what's wrong. You know, we don't need to tell people what to think. That's Rob Bennett's take. I think Shiller's idea is a good one, and I'm looking forward to seeing how it plays out, you know, over the next year or two, over the first 2 years of the new administration. Love to hear feedback. Contact, you know, use the Contact Rob button at the left side of every page. Good luck with your investing strategies. You take care. And don't forget, morning snowflake. Morning snowflake. We're all going to be puppy dogs from here on in. Take care. Bye-bye.